With Kamala Harris now joining the Biden ticket, the political power prosecutors has gained new visibility on the political stage. The Republicans are struggling with how to cast Harris as former DA in San Francisco and Attorney General of California. So, Mike, let's talk about the role of prosecutors in the criminal justice system and the movement to dismantle policing as we know it. What's happening nationally as well as here in Portland?
Well, nationally, the role of the prosecutor is rebounding against the people who propped them up by giving them more power along with the police for so many years. The first real prosecutor to break through was Larry Krasner in Philadelphia. But I have come to really appreciate prosecutors because of Chesa Boudin in San Francisco. He was elected on an unapologetically radical platform of decarceration, of ending the money bail system, of testing every rape kit, of protecting San Francisco's status as a sanctuary city and not cooperating at all with ICE, even threatening to arrest ICE officers. And he has been succeeding. People are back in his play. The police union spent $700,000 trying to keep him from being elected. Nobody really thought he would succeed, but he did. It's almost impossible these days to run too far to the left as a prosecutor.
Can you explain some the range of powers of the prosecutor? I think the concept of the attorney general and the district attorney are familiar to people, but can you put those into a chart of some kind, explaining their powers and their importance in deciding whether charges made by the police go forward and become a criminal case?
Well, I am positively giddy these days over what Chesa Boudin has done. And it's a great illustration of the immense power prosecutors have. Of course, they decide whether or not to press charges in the first place. The police don't get to do that. The police can arrest you, but whether you'll actually go to court and whether you'll actually be convicted of anything is strictly up to the prosecutor.
And there are a number of prosecutors involved in that, right?
Well, if the top prosecutor makes the call, I mean, there are, of course, in Multnomah County, it's a huge office. There's 70 sub-prosecutors under Mike Schmidt. And every county all over the country, the prosecutor has a really well-funded group of lawyers. They have large amounts of money to do all the kind of research and get all the expert testimony they need to prosecute a case. They've got tons of money everywhere. But lately, they've been exercising it in a really creative way. In San Francisco, my partner Lisa Short and I have been representing a man named Paul Redd for some 40 years, trying to get him out of prison. Mr. Redd was convicted of a first-degree murder when he was 18 years old, shooting a guy in a misfire drug deal. That was a slovenly trial. The only evidence against him was the eyewitness testimony of a guy who was the actual shooter and was himself shot and killed 6 months later. But Mr. Redd was stuck in prison, even though he had parole hearings for decades, because he was associated with George Jackson and political black activity, and that was lethal to him before the California Parole Board. So Mr. Redd, he's an ebullient, optimistic personality. He survived 12 years in the Pelican Bay's hole in solitary confinement. He's always been an upbeat guy. He's engaging. He was finally released from the hole, and staff, as well as other prisoners, have liked him. He's been working in a hospice program and in the medical facility at Vacaville, but the parole board would never, ever let him out. But Chesa Boudin did. He found a way that allowed him to recall the sentence. And we presented the facts of Mr. Redd's case. And there's a tiny little rule that allows the prosecutor and the trial court to recall a particular sentence. So he did. And Mr. Redd was resentenced to a manslaughter beef. And he had long since served all the time there was on that charge. So he was released from prison 1 month ago after 41 years. That was because of the prosecutor. 2 weeks later, Mr. Boudin converted a San Francisco death sentence, one of the very few, a death sentence from the 1980s. It was involving a guy picked up in a gay bar. It was notorious at the time in San Francisco because the chairperson of the jury was a man, Jose Soria, who was equivalent in San Francisco of Darcel here, a very well-known cross-dresser who performed in nightclubs. And the death verdict has been there for years. I assisted the attorney throughout the 90s and early 2000s, but now the federal counsel went back to Chesa Boudin and prosecutors in the San Francisco office and got a resentencing. And so now his death sentence is removed and he's eligible for parole in about another 8 years. So prosecutors can do a lot, or they cannot do a lot. And the police all over the country from William Barr on down are just apoplectic over the fact that these prosecutors, like Larry Krasner in Philadelphia, was a real pioneer. People who are not apologetic, like Democrats so often are, cringing when they want to do something for fear of pushback. Krasner fired like 30 really aggressive prosecutors when he took over the office. Chesa Boudin fired 6 prosecutors the first day on the job. And he has been active every week, every day in small decisions as well as large policy issues. He has made a profound difference in how the criminal justice system is administered in San Francisco. And that makes it possible for people like Mike Schmidt in Portland to refuse to file charges against people for petty crimes and say not only that he's not to be apologetic about it, to say, we have a right to protest. The freedom to assemble is an essential way of expressing strong feelings, and that's something that shouldn't be punished. It's something that shouldn't be criminalized.
So how much do the police and the chief of police and the police union have influence here over the prosecutor, Mike Schmidt, and the prosecution of cases related to the protests?
I don't know for sure, but I do know that Mike Schmidt is surely heartened by the fact that much more radical moves have been made by other prosecutors in Houston and Philadelphia and most notably in San Francisco. And they have been met with acclaim. It's like people are tired of the criminal justice system, which has been expanding and bloating for several decades now, despite the steady decline in the crime rate, that people should be administered by people who have a larger sense of community in mind than simply trying to tack up skins and obtain convictions.
So how would you assess Kamala Harris's record as a DA and attorney general? And were those different phases, different politics clearly working in San Francisco versus this office for the whole state? And does it matter the historical period and constraints on her that might suggest different possibilities now for how she will respond to the inevitable onslaught of attacks from the right that she's soft on crime?
Well, she's an opportunist, and that's not necessarily a bad thing because she's also smart and she's observed what's happened when people have watched, for example, the killing of Mr. Floyd in Minnesota. It's an excruciating video that if you see it, you cannot not be changed by what you see. And that there's a deep spirit of people wanting to have a different criminal justice system now. And she's not opposed to that. Her career was very conventional. She was an ordinary prosecutor. She did one relatively brave thing in 2003. There was a cop killer in San Francisco, and she refused to seek the death penalty. She went for a life without possibility of parole. And that cost her the support she had enjoyed before of the local police department. But her career as an attorney general for the whole state was also very ordinary. I mean, the death penalty is a good example. She's always personally opposed capital punishment. But when in 2014, a judge in Orange County, a federal judge, struck down the whole California system as being hopelessly arbitrary, capricious, and delayed, She appealed that and opposed that ruling and got it set aside by the Ninth Circuit. Notably, she didn't do the same thing. She made the opposite choice about a California voter-approved ban on gay marriage. She chose not to enforce that. So she did nothing that made her stick out. She did some few things, which she will, I'm surely, inflate about trying to protect people from being evicted. But there were mass evictions all over California in 2007 and 8 during the financial crisis. There was nothing really outstanding, either good or bad, in her time as a chief officer.
Both Harris and Biden have dismissed, and perhaps rightfully, that they are in the position of supporting defunding the police. That will be their mantra, and certainly come up over and over again, and inevitable distancing themselves from the Black Lives Matter movement and calls to abolish or defund the police. What's your take on that and prediction for how they will handle a movement that's still going strong and has a quite sizable public support?
Well, the idea that we're even talking about defunding the police is just breathtaking to me. And there's the idea that cutting tens of millions of dollars from the budget here in Portland is not nearly enough. It's really striking. There's plenty of work to be done at the police, with the police at local levels. They've got this little Trumpian private army, the whole Department of Homeland Security and ICE. Those are places where I think people should target and ask and insist that these departments be reduced. But the power over the police is something that traditionally is a question of to be resolved by local people. You know, the Portland police are our problem. You know, there was, during the Obama years, the Department of Justice had some oversight, but their oversight was also happening in Minneapolis. And I think Minneapolis is a great argument for defunding the police, because that police department had every sort of training program, every sort of consciousness raising program, and yet it made no difference in the general culture, the warrior culture of that police department. I think it's a really important discussion. I don't think Biden and Harris are going to get in the way of what local people do. I don't think they're going to support that. They're not going to come out and say, we want to defund the police. They'll say, we want to reform the police, or we want to take a close look. But the best thing they can do, I think, is just not get involved with local efforts to diminish the role of the police department, which has expanded drastically over the past 20 or 30 years.
So, Mike, let's continue to follow this. There'll be many more conversations on policing and the fights in the streets and in the courts and in prosecutors' offices over policing powers.
Well, it's so good that given that the courts are going down the drain due to all of Trump's appointments, that prosecutors around the country are stepping up.
Yeah, good. Okay, this is Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker talking today about Kamala Harris, her record as a prosecutor, and what we can expect in the upcoming election.